Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me as currently and as consistently clean, going on over 2.5 months, Mr. Spencer Scrub-a-Dub Williams.
Yes, we here at The Filmlosophers continue to know how to count upward.
We do, yeah. And we're counting for the days onward, too, because we need to get out of here. We have been in quarantine for already almost 3 months, and within that time, we've had an opportunity to talk at great lengths about movies, about the love of the community, and in this particular month, we are talking about our love of anime. And so we are honoring the great Hayao Miyazaki and his wonderful works by talking about one of our favorite Miyazaki films, and that is Laputa Castle in the Sky. So stick around as we talk about that, because I know Spencer's just bubbling to get started.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited about this. But first, tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We have been filling our podcast episode list with episode after episode after episode after episode of us going on and on and about the current situation with the world and the current situation within the United States. And needless to say, we have come to a new level of appreciation for for movies and for everything else that we normally, what we don't take for granted. But we're hoping that people who are listening to us learn that they shouldn't take for granted. And part of that opportunity has been to talk with people who absolutely love movies, love theater, and just are absolute gems. So go back to our website, filmlosophers.com, check out all those great episodes, because we have a lot of fun episodes that we've had so far within the last couple of months. Our quarantine episodes, if you want to call them that.
Quarantine,
you
know, when club. We're done,
when we're done with all this, we're gonna like how they did with Marvel, the Infinity Saga. That's gonna be our quarantine saga. So
yeah, but I don't want to live through this. This is so annoying and awful.
Well, like we said, we have a great show in stores. We're gonna be talking about It's Gonna Be Anime, one of the greatest works in our personal opinion from Hayao Miyazaki. One of the movies that actually touches both of our hearts quite frequently every time we see it, and that is Laputa Castle in the Sky. So, Spencer, before we go any further, why don't you give them that official synopsis goodness?
Pazu, an engineer's apprentice, finds a young girl, Shita, floating down from the sky and discovers they are both searching for a legendary floating castle, Laputa. Together, they embark on a daring quest and encounter greedy pirates, secret agents, and astounding obstacles that keep them from the truth and find from each other.
That's right, and from each other. You got it.
Yeah.
directed and written by Hayao Miyazaki. The film stars the vocal talents of Mayumi Tanaka, Kiko Yokizawa, Kotoi Hatsui, Minori Torada, Fujio Tokita, Ichiro Nagai, and so many others. The film has actually had two sets of English voice dubbing actors. You have a cast from the Streamline release back in 1989 with Barbara Goodson, Laura Cody, Rachel Vanowin, Jeff Winkless, Mike Reynolds, Edward Mannix, and so forth and so forth. But then you have the Disney re-release back in 1998 that actually got released in 2003 with a much more recognizable English cast from James Vanderbeek, Anna Paquin, even Debbie Derryberry. If you don't know who Debbie Derryberry is, she's the woman who played what's his name? Boy Genius. Jimmy Neutron. Yeah.
Okay.
Chloe Sleachman, Mark Hamill, Jim Cummings, Richard Dysart, Michael McShane, Andy Patinkin, Andy Dick, John Hotstetter. There was a really good string of different actors in that particular film, so it was a really interesting cast. First, this actually a couple quick notes about it. This is the first film from Studio Ghibli since the opening of the studio in the summer of 1985. So the studio opened up in 1985, and then this movie came out the following year in Japan.
That's pretty good first movie out.
Oh, completely. This is one of those movies that's like you hit hard and you kind of leave the expectation after that. Like it's pretty easy to kind of now expect greatness from them because they've kind of delivered on greatness every time they do something.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's a really big treat. Another piece of information, dubbed in 1998, as I mentioned, Castle in the Sky did not actually receive a home video release until 5 years later when Spirited Away, back in 2001, won an Academy Award for Best Animated Film. We actually talked about Spirited Away in our last episode, Lesson 217. During that time, it would be shown at the occasional film festival, and it actually sold out with little word of mouth, so people didn't even know that it was never publicized that that Castle in the Sky was going to be played at these film festivals, and people would find out and immediately flock to those theaters, and it would sell out just about every time. Despite its limited success, Disney's official explanation for the delay was sales. It always comes back to money. Mm-hmm. However, by 2003, Laputa had long made its money back in DVD sales in Japan, fueling fire to the long-held fan speculation that the company purchased the Ghibli library for the purpose of sabotaging its potential success in the U.S. So imagine, if you will, the whole idea of distributing in the U.S., the people who bought the rights to that only bought the rights so that it would limit the accessibility of a competing foreign studio from actually taking over your market in the animation department.
I mean, Eddie, that just sounds so cutthroat. I can't imagine Disney doing that.
Right? Oh my gosh, that's so anti-Mickey.
Oh, and that's definitely in their wheelhouse. They made that wheelhouse of being cutthroat.
Yeah, without a doubt. This is definitely something that I think, I don't know if it's like because we're getting older or because like the instances where the baloney is like waning thin and we're starting to see through it all. But like I'm starting to realize that like Disney is very much out for themselves.
Oh,
they are not they're not the family friendly company that I've always known them to be.
They own 60% of the media now. It is out of control.
completely. A little bit of trivia about the actual film. Laputa, the Flying Island, was a setting in Jonathan Swift's novel Gulliver's Travel, published in 1726. Funny enough, Hayao Miyazaki said in an interview that he was actually unaware that, quote, Laputa, end quote, means the whore in Spanish. So
I remember when I found that out, I was like, oh no, this is not going to translate well into other languages.
If he had been aware of the translation, he said he would not have used it in the title. And it's funny because I remember when I was younger, and I remember I saw it when I was younger, and I remember the title going up on screen. But it's like the name of it is like real quick. It's not even like up there for very long because Castle in the Sky covers it pretty quickly. But I remember seeing it, and I grew up in a Spanish-speaking household. My mom and dad both speak Spanish. I don't speak it. So I should say a Spanish-hearing household. I just heard it. And I remember saying it out loud. I'm like, someone asked me, what are you watching? Laputa. And I got beat for it. But still, I mean, as a little kid, you know, if you've ever read Gulliver's Travel, and you saw that, knowing what the word means in your language, you're like, it's in there. Like those little silly moments. And so I had always wondered if he knew. And when I found out about the fact that he was actually when he said it in an interview that he was unaware of it, it kind of makes me really like vindicated as a child. Like, see, he didn't know any better. He didn't know any better.
I remember the first time I watched this film and like I heard that, I was like, I feel like I've heard that at school in a bad context. And then of course I went to Google and I was like, what does this mean in Spanish? And I was like, oh no.
Oh yeah. And mind you, curse words aside, this movie holds a really special place in both mine and Spencer's heart. I remember we've talked at length about the last two movies, which Lesson 216, I believe, was it 216? We talked about My Neighbor Totoro. Lesson 217 last week, we talked about Spirited Away. And mind you, those were both really great films. They both really hold a unique place in both of our hearts, but in different ways, some more than others. Spencer,
okay, well, let's not call people out.
You know, your hatred towards Totoro.
It's
and,
not a hatred.
Know,
it's an cat indifference. Buses. That okay? Hatred to cat bus. Yes, you can call me out of that all day. I hate that cat bus. It's just an allergy attack waiting to happen.
But here's the thing, though, to all you listeners, Spirited Away or Castle in the Sky actually is a very special film to both myself and Spencer because, to be honest, it's I know for me, one of the best moments that I remember in mine and Spencer's friendship was when we decided that we were going to make every effort to go to the Ghibli Fest films in theaters.
Yeah.
And so years ago, Spencer and I decided we were going to try to make this a regular thing. And so, the first film that we went to go see was Castle in the Sky. And that kind of, for me, was like, yeah, this is our thing. This is mine and Spencer's thing. And it was kind of from that moment forward that, honestly, if I'm being completely just transparent, it was from that moment forward that I knew I needed to make Spencer a part of this show, because it was watching that and seeing you. Like, one of the things that I love doing, and I've talked about it at length on this podcast, one of the things that I love doing is I love watching people who enjoy movies.
Yeah, it's hella creepy at the time, though.
Yeah, well, you know what? You can take it. You know what? You didn't notice it at the time. Whatever. I don't care. You're not my dad. And so and so at the time, I remember I went to go see it, and I was already a fan of this movie. So we went to go see it, and I remember watching you watch it, and it was interesting because you were mirroring a lot of the emotions that I was already feeling, and it was like, this guy gets it. This is completely how I am feeling, and maybe not expressing it outwardly, but like watching you engage in the movie. And then in the instances where we've had other times where I've been able to watch you watch movies, it's all been an interesting, like, just consistent investment in, like, dude, he's completely understanding this and he's completely getting it on a whole different level, to where I'm at, like, where I love movies and where I, not to toot my own horn that I'm like, oh, there's a higher level of understanding and blah blah blah, but like I like to, like, this podcast, you know, we dig deep into movies and movies are my passion, and recognizing that and seeing your passion for these kinds of movies and others, it just kind of solidified it to me. It was like, yeah, I definitely need to have Spencer on this show.
Oh, so, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And I know my passion for the soundtrack is very clear to you, of all people, because I bring it up pretty much any time we're talking about this movie.
Every time. What do you mean, any time? There is yet to be a time where we were talking about this movie or about soundtracks, and you're like, you know what I hated? That one time where, you know what, that we were watching this movie and that soundtrack just dropped and it was like, what the heck is this? And it's gone from simple conversations to full-blown, like, Spencer meltdowns.
Meltdown's extreme. Okay.
It's like the Mandela effect for Spencer, because for the longest, he wasn't sure what he was hearing, because we thought we had heard it in the movie theaters. And then we borrowed a copy of Castle in the Sky, and we were watching it over his house, and there was a scene that came up, and we'll talk about it in a second, but there was a scene that came up, and Spencer immediately paused the movie and was like, "That's not right." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "No, that wasn't right. That just, did you hear that?" And I'm like, "What the heck are you talking about?" He goes, "Like, seriously, did you not hear that?" And I'm like, "What the heck are you talking about, Spencer?" And of course, Spencer's like, "Seriously, that just didn't sound, did you not hear that? Am I the only one that's not hearing this?" And I could have swore, I thought he was playing with me for a second. I thought he was joking.
I was not.
Until he's like, "This does not sound right. Do you not hear? Listen." And then he played it back. And I'm like, "What am I listening for?" He's like, "Oh my gosh." And you started freaking out. And it's like, "Just explain it to me. Tell me what you're trying." And so he started explaining how there's a difference in the soundtrack of the music to this film, to where certain parts have an orchestral accompaniment, or some of them were just like super minimal. And
okay, I'm about to dive into the part.
Okay, well, we'll get into that in a second, but I think it's plain and simple to see that, you know, we both have a very special place for this film within our hearts, and I think it goes without saying that, you know what, Castle in the Sky is one of those movies that, on so many different levels, from the story to the acting, the voice acting of the talent, to the to the music that swells and is beautiful. You may have heard it at the beginning a little bit ago when we started talking about it, how that music just swells in and it's so just wonderfully, gracefully, like, placed into each and every spot. And even the cinematography, like, someone made the comment not too long ago, like, nobody makes a cloud like Miyazaki. Like, if you're so great at what you do to where your clouds are like noteworthy, then I think it's high time to say that, you know what, you're on a level all on your own, because it's some animators, some creators, they're fine and whatnot, but like, if you're part of a studio, if you're a part of a team where your clouds look like art, like, what else is there to say?
Like, truly.
And it's not even digitally rendered or anything. It's just from 1986.
Yeah, yeah. Back then, they were not doing that. That was wildly expensive if they could even do it.
Big time.
Yeah, there was just, like, I was watching this movie, and again, I was like, there was, like, bits and pieces of the movie where I'm like, I could just take this, like, still and put it on my wall, and I'd be happy with it. There's so much just good style in this movie that it's just mind-blowing. Especially, like, later on in the movie, like, when they're flying through a storm and, like, there's close-ups of Pazuzu's face. Like, it looks amazing. This, like, just the art in this entire film is just out of this world.
So, obviously, we got a lot of emotions involved into this film. We have a lot of thoughts. And I don't want to keep, you know, just standing at the dam for all of this. I just want to kind of dive right in and just really talk about it. And one of the first things I do want to have to talk about is the first off, the acting of this film, the vocal acting. Now, we've gone back and forth with the last two films, or at least actually with just My Neighbor Totoro. I don't remember us kind of getting into it about Spirited Away in, like, different vocal talents, vocal castings.
Yeah.
I know you and I were on different opinions when it came to the vocal castings for My Neighbor Totoro,
right,
where you like the newer version and I like the older version, specifically for the little girl.
I didn't like the newer version because I found her grating. Remember, we were trying to
we were arguing over who had it worse.
Yes. It was the opposite.
I honestly, okay, you're right, because I believe I had it worse on my end, because I had the woman who played Angelica from Rugrats, and you said you had it worse because you had Elle Fanning, right?
Yeah, but like, and I would rather listen to Angelica. Like, what?
No, I'm telling you, man. No, that was horrendous.
No,
I was straight like English siren kind of. Like whatever those are, like it was just long and drawn out and ear drum bursting kind of stuff.
Yes, but like again, Elle Fanning was like short and really punchy. She like punched you with that like like, I was like, okay, like you are hitting annoying little girl so perfectly right now. And I'm thinking that's what you're supposed to be doing, but I hate it, so please stop.
But the thing is, she was a little girl at the time, so it kind of worked out. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is a grown woman playing a little girl, and that's like, for me, Elle Fanning couldn't control it. Oh. On the other side, the woman who played her could mm-hmm. definitely control that, like that whine and that complaining. And I'm like, nope, not even close, nope. Mm. But talking about this film, I think you and I can both agree Anna Paquin and James Vanderbeek were probably part of the best cast.
Yeah, I love them. Because
you had incredible cast members of James Vanderbeek, who, if you don't remember James Vanderbeek, he was the star of Dawson's Creek. Hey, that kind of rhymed.
okay.
Anna Paquin, who honestly is most known for her roles in True Blood as well as Rogue from the X-Men series. Do you know who Rogue is?
What?
Please tell me.
Yeah, Rogue from X-Men? Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I was looking at Muska. And I was like, yes, let's bring him up.
And then Colonel Muska, who is played by the incredibly talented Mark Hamill.
Hamill! He's so great!
It was borderline, like, Joker-esque, to be honest. It was really great.
A controlled Joker, though.
Joker. Yeah. Not quite. This could have almost passed as, like, a precursor for the turning of into Joker, so
I
to speak.
I could see that with this voice.
Yeah. And then you had General Morrow, played by the incredible Jim Cummings, voice of Winnie the Pooh, Darkwing Duck. I mean, need I say more? Like, literally everything that Jim Cummings has done is absolute phenomenal.
That man's gold.
Gold is an understatement. I mean, he's done everything from Star Wars roles to Winnie the Pooh to narrations of stories to, like, literally there's a million things this guy has done. And then Louis, one of the sons of Dola, Captain Dola, was Mandy Patinkin, who played my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Oh, okay. Like,
that was Mandy Patinkin. And at the height of when he was doing Broadway, to be honest. So Mandy Patinkin did Broadway for a little while. Andy Dick. Everybody knows Andy Dick. Yeah. And then Michael McShane. He's done... I was hoping you were going to pick up on that, but I guess not.
Wait,
he's done a lot of different vocal talents and whatnot. Do you remember Richie Rich?
The one with
Macaulay Culkin?
Yeah.
He was the professor. He was the scientist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the really big guy. Yes. He was also like Friar Tuck in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Okay,
never mind. But... to be honest, like this whole list of people is absolutely incredible. The range of actresses and actors that you have in this film, for me, really made, you know, the great moments of this particular film. But to be honest, I don't think I've ever listened or watched the original English dubbing. Have you?
Not fully, because mostly because of the soundtrack.
Oh, because it's okay. Okay.
I'm definitely getting into it at some point.
We'll get into it. But I'm surprised that you,
like, I really was like, oh, I'm going to watch this with the alternate soundtrack this time so I can really take it in. And then, you know, I started up and I was like, yeah, maybe some other time. Like, I got to eat and stuff.
So. Well, you know, it's the interesting thing. I don't know if you knew this, but the voice of Patsu.
Yeah.
So the voice of Patsu was played by Barbara Goodson.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Goodson was the original voice of Rita Repulsa.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Did you not know this?
No, I didn't know that the first Patsu was Rita Repulsa.
I figured I would kind of lay it on you in the middle of this thing.
Interesting.
Should I blow your mind again?
All right, let's try it. Try to go two for two.
She was the voice of Takashi in Akira.
Wait, what?
She was the voice of Takashi.
This woman has had a career.
My goodness. Yeah, yeah. yeah, she's got a pretty good filmography, but I figured I would kind of drop that on you in the middle of the episode instead of telling you ahead of time. So there you go. Happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks.
but I mean, aside from her, I'm not too familiar with a lot of these other people that were, I mean, a lot of them had done a lot of different things with certain anime roles, like Jeffrey Allen Winkless. He's the one who played Muska in the English dubbing. He also was a voice actor on Vampire Hunter D.
Okay.
Do you remember that that series?
I never saw that one.
It was actually really good. But like I said, a lot of different people, a lot of different individuals. And you know, it's good. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some pros and, you know, as well as cons to that particular English dub. But for me personally, I don't know. I like the chemistry between like James Vanderbeek and Anna Paquin and Mark Hamill being like absolute nuts, you know, and then Jim Cummings just literally coming in there from, what was the name of the big guy from, Pete.
Yes.
He was the voice of Pete from Goof Troop.
Yeah. Like, you know, whenever that general talk, I imagined Pete for some reason. I was like, why do I keep thinking of Pete when this guy keeps talking? It's because it was Jim. Because
it was clearly Pete. But this is a great cast. I mean, you cannot go wrong with this cast. It really is. And then even if you're getting into people like, what did I say her name was? Debbie. What was her name? Debbie Derryberry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's actually her name.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here.
But Debbie Derryberry has done everything from like the aliens from Toy Story, the claw, to like I said, Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius, to Ben 10. She did Monster High. She did, you know, some voice acting from the Stitch series, from Lilo and Stitch. I mean, there's everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely like it's got a great talented cast, needless to say. But I think if anybody was going to stand out I probably would have to say I loved seeing, and maybe it's because of the fact that he's so far become a recurring character, Uncle Pom, which was the guy who was the mechanic, if you will, of Captain Dola's ship, looked like what's his name? Looked like the dude from Sonic. What's the bad guy? Dr. Robotnik?
Dr. Robotnik. That's where you're going with this?
Well, no. He's got those like whiskered out, he's got that whiskered out mustache and those goggles on.
Yeah.
He looked definitely like, what's his name, from Spirited Away.
You're talking about the mechanic on the ship, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you said...
What was his name? Kamiji. Kamiki?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's from...
Kamijo.
Yeah, from Spirited Away.
Yeah. He looks dead on the same.
Yeah. Recycling assets. That saves you time right there.
Kamaji. That was his name. Kamaji. Cycling assets. But then it's interesting because they look very similar, like minus the arms. Like, I'm pretty sure if he had the arms in that ship, he could do a lot more. But like from Spirited Away to this one. But it's interesting how the characters look closely drawn similarly. And then I heard, and let me know what you think, because I heard that particular person represents Miyazaki's father, because Miyazaki's father was an engineer. Remember, we talked about, well, we didn't talk about it on air, but we talked about it when we saw The Wind Rises.
Yes.
I remember that. So, and looks just like her. I mean, looks just like the other guy. They look the similar.
Yeah, and I would assume that, like, if there are, like, recurring character faces, like, you know, they're either, like, based on someone important to Hayao Miyazaki or something like that, because, like, there must be a reason why you would use those faces.
No, completely, and that's what I'm saying. Maybe there's credence to it. I don't know if it's true. I didn't really have a lot of time to look it up, but it definitely would be a really cool, like, oh, yeah, this is true. Sure.
Also, it's so, just not a bad character design.
Well, whatever it is, they took it. Dr. Robotnik took it. So, bald head, goggles, and mustache that points out, like, you know, beams of light from his nose.
Okay.
How else am I supposed to put it? And when it comes to this particular movie... There's a lot of different takes on it. There's a lot of different beliefs. There's a lot of different experiences. And I didn't get a chance to ask this to you earlier, Spence, but when was the first time you saw Castle in the Sky?
I don't know. It's very close to or whenever I was watching Spirited Away. Because I think that was like around the time that, you know, I just started ordering a whole bunch of DVDs from Netflix. So definitely after Disney had gotten over themselves and let like the movie exist on a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how old were you when that happened?
Oh, probably around 20.
Oh, so you got into it fairly recently.
Well, if you consider over 10 years ago recently, then I guess...
Well, yeah, I consider it 10 years ago recently. What's wrong with you, man? We're not that old.
You honestly consider 10 years recent?
Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Because, like, yeah, I was, like, 20, like, 12-ish years ago going on 13.
So. Oh, Spencer.
Just throwing that out there, you know.
Well.
Your recent is a whole teenager. Just want to say that.
Yeah, we're not going to say that because that didn't sound right at all. but needless to say, so your experience with it was 13 years ago when you saw the other ones that you rented from Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
So you didn't see it when you were a kid. You didn't see any of these when you were a kid.
I saw none of these when I was a kid.
Wow. Okay. That's just very interesting to me. I figured you would have seen these when you were younger, especially since you were like into Pokemon and stuff.
Well, that's because Pokemon was
or Dragon
on...
Ball.
Yeah, all of those things made an appearance like at some... Well, okay, not Dragon Ball. Well, no, Dragon Ball. Yeah, made an appearance on like basic TV.
Uh-huh.
Which I had.
I'm not, hey, I'm not, you know, I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, like, it's just
poor shaming someone else.
I literally said, I saw, what was it? My Neighbor Totoro on a Fox Saturday afternoon movie. So shame on you. I was poor too. Take it back. But this particular movie, I actually didn't see until around the same time you did.
What? You're talking about me? You didn't see it till our...
No, because I had seen My Neighbor Totoro when I was younger. And obviously, you know, well, because I mentioned it last week, I had seen, Spirited Away in my last year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular one, I didn't see until I was like 21, 20. Okay. Like it was around there because somebody had a copy of it. Someone had just bought it, a DVD, and DVD players were like the big rage back then. So people could, they would go and flaunt their whole like, oh, I got a DVD player, blah, blah, blah. Like it was a time. There was a time.
Yeah.
So this was one of those movies where you actually... people would like flaunt their DVD collection. I remember going over somebody's house one time and I saw that they had it on their shelf.
Mm-hmm.
You're right there. You look a little perplexed. Are you following the story?
I'm following the story that you've barely told. Yes.
So I remember going over someone's house. We were hanging out. I was here already in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
So I was over someone's house. They had it. And I'm like, hey, let's watch that. I've seen, a couple other ones. Or I've seen some anime. So, yeah, let's watch it. And I remember seeing it for the first time. And mind you, I think it was the redistribution one, the one that didn't have your luxurious complaint.
Like, it's fine. It's fine. We're talking about the next. We're talking about this.
But it was an experience where, like, the first time I saw it, I immediately knew I needed to have it. I needed to buy that movie. And
that's really understandable.
And DVDs at the time were kind of pricey. Like, you think things are expensive now. Like, DVDs were, like, almost $30. And
they're still kind of that price if you get blue.
Well, Blu-rays are. DVDs aren't so much.
And those Blu-rays... were the Blu-rays of the time.
Yeah, but
because you could have gotten the DVD equivalent, which was the VHS.
True. Yeah. But a lot of people were moving out of their VHS selling sections and they were just having DVDs. Mm. And then the places I shopped, all they had were old VHSs. So, and then you could only rent it from Blockbuster so many times.
I mean, you could rent it forever. Or just buy it from Blockbuster.
You could. Like, if I... quick side note. I've been thinking about this.
Okay.
I really, really wish I could build a time machine so that way I could go back in time to my last experience at a Blockbuster and tell the person behind the desk, thank you for your service, and then walk out. It's one of those things where it's like, I wish I could have walked into one and then just asked them, like, can I have a bunch of empty containers? Like, just give me some of your VHS containers. And if you don't mind, I'll take a sign, like before they fully close down, like some merch. I wanted some swag. Don't go down without the ship. Kind of thing.
Go to the last Blockbuster and see if they'll sell you some.
They're in Oregon.
There for the moment, and they're probably closed because of the pandemic, so now's the right time to go loot them.
Oh my gosh. I'm not gonna go loot a Blockbuster. No, but I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, you know what, yeah, I really do wish, because then I would have gone back and I would have been like, I would have shaken their hand like purposefully. Like I would have definitely grabbed their hand and was like, thank you. Like totally.
I'm going to see if I can get them to ship me a used like DVD case from that Blockbuster.
No, it has to be a VHS.
No, it's got VHS. Why do you have to be so picky?
Because it's a VHS. So, I don't know. That was a quick side note. I was thinking about it. I'm like, man, what a missed opportunity.
Yes, what a missed opportunity at Blockbuster.
Yeah, Blockbuster. I mean, it was no Hollywood Video, but still.
I never really went there.
But I say all that to say, yeah, it was definitely a movie that I was passionate about, that I loved watching. I rented it a few times, but then life happened and I just, things got jumped around. I got moved around and stuff like that. And it just, it kind of fell away by the wayside. I didn't pick up anything from Studio Ghibli again until you and I went to go to the theater.
What?
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, from like 2005, 2006 till 2014, 2015 when you and I first went.
Okay.
But like I said, because it was just the timing of everything. I just didn't have the time. Life happened. I had to go and start working full time, and I had to make money to make people, give people, you know, opportunities to live, and me being out here and working and going to school at the same time and sports and everything else. Like, life just happened, and I never found room again to fit those kinds of things that I loved. So, you know, insert year of Mr. Spencer coming in and in dragging me like, hey, for your birthday, I'm going to take you to a Ghibli Fest movie. Okay. And then you took me and we went. And then, and you had taken me the month before. And then the next month you bought me the Blu-ray. I remember that.
I remember that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all your fault. So
yeah, that's my fault, but okay.
It's your fault in a good way. But
no one has ever said that. It's your fault in a good way. What?
Exactly. See, when you say it like that, it's got so much more purpose to it and much more meaning. But see, speaking of your faults, let's talk about the situation with the music.
Talk about the soundtrack.
So here's the thing. Spencer and I, when we went to go see it, I remember us hearing the movie one way. And mind you, it was the Disney release version of it, one of them. And it was beautiful. And not once did I hear Spencer moan and groan and complain at all. Like I said earlier, fast forward to a few months ago, I think last year, when I brought over a copy that I had borrowed of Castle in the Sky, and we got not even, you know, I think I got the story mixed up because it wasn't even 10 minutes in.
It was 12 minutes.
No, it was 3 minutes in.
Because it was probably 3 minutes that I noticed it, and then 12 minutes before I stopped it.
It was 3 minutes in when you noticed it, and then, yeah, and then 12 minutes in when you stopped it because it came right to the point right when the little boy started playing his horn. Horn, trumpet, it's a brass instrument, whatever.
They are very different.
It was playing his piccolo, whatever. and Spencer literally stopped the movie and was like, this is not right.
Right.
And okay, the following explanation that Spencer is going to give is his reason why that was not correct.
Okay, so first off, just so everyone knows how I was feeling about this. When we got to this trumpet section, it's a section where Pazu is playing his morning song for his birds. it starts with him on a trumpet, and then the Disney dub has like orchestral music that follows it. The version I heard was just Pazu on his trumpet, and it was so upsetting that it's like the sound of nails on the chalkboard, but like in reverse because something is missing. That's what it came across as, and it was just, it's like the fact that you didn't notice it was driving me insane.
It was not that bad.
I'm not saying it's bad. No, I'll agree. It's not bad. It's just so wildly different that I couldn't help but notice.
It was not that.
It's no. Do not tell me it is not wildly different. You're being so disingenuous right now that it's
no. I'm not. No, it's serious. I know you're serious. I'm just saying. I've fallen so far away from my microphone. It's not even funny.
Okay, here's the thing.
Yes, you were very serious about it, Spencer. I give you that. You were very serious.
Okay, here's the reason why, though. The first time I watched this movie, I remember it vividly. Like, I remember there's the intro with the Dola and her gang going to kidnap Sheeta from a blimp. And then she falls out of the blimp, and then it goes into the opening credits. That opening song is what sold me on this movie when I was watching it, because it's just so beautifully done that, like it's a song that I just listen to randomly. Like, I've been listening to that song for 13 years because it's that good. So, like, the soundtrack has a really high bar, like, for me. So when you change
I'm listening. I'm listening.
So when you change it, the other version, the version that Disney put out that I'm very familiar with, is a symphonic version. The other version that's in Japan is mostly symphonic with some like synthesizers like replacing music. So it's they're very like they sound similar, but they have like distinctions. So you can like I can hear bits of music, and even if it's the same part, I'll be able to tell which soundtrack it's from, because like they're similar, but they're not the same. And this other like Japanese soundtrack, like it is overall a quieter movie with that. And it's not bad. It's just, it kind of goes in with the theme of like Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki, like taking their moments to just breathe and take in a scene. And that's what that falls into. And Disney, like, this is like early days when, like, you know, anime wasn't normally shown in movie theaters. So they're like, people in America aren't going to stand for the silence. We need to jazz the soundtrack up. So they went back to the original guy, which thankfully they did. They're like, hey, can you extend this and make it orchestral? And they did this, and he did it. And it's just a fantastic soundtrack. And going back to that Blu-ray that Eddie brought over, because this was driving me wild, and I made him like make me wait until I understood before we started this show why I seemed to heard like the Japanese soundtrack with English voice characters. Apparently, the Studio G Kids re-released the Blu-ray in 2017. And they included two versions of it for English. One is the original Disney with the super fancy soundtrack and a lot of background noise. And the other one is the original synthetic score with the Disney voice actors. So that explains really how we got to like this weird mishmash, because like that drove me wild for a bit. Where I just could not understand, like,
for a bit.
Yeah.
It didn't drive you wild. Driving you wild, if that's what you call driving you wild, then they drove King Kong wild. You were about to knock some people over. You demanded answers, and you were like Charlie Day in that one meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where he's like this, and he's got wires all over the place. I know where it's coming from. And it turned into like this huge massive undertaking of you trying to find where those original scores and music were coming from, because you knew it came from somewhere, you knew you had heard it, and you were not going to take no for an answer.
See, I want to say you're wrong, but you're completely right.
Thank you.
No, it drove me. By the way, it was. I was like, what is happening? What is this? So, like, yeah, I really dug deep into the soundtrack because it really is a fantastic soundtrack. And
well, you have the incredible mind of Joe Hisaishi, who did a lot of Studio Ghibli's films.
Yeah,
he scored a lot of those. And he's done everything from, obviously, like I said, like we're talking about now, Castle in the Sky, to Porco Rosso, to he's the one who did the composition for Spirited Away. You know, he did, I don't know if you ever saw that movie Robot Carnival, but he did like that one, Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah, a lot of his soundtracks are just real bangers. I love them so much.
Yeah, I mean, even Howl's Moving Castle, you know, all those ones that are known from Studio Ghibli, he is the composer. Spencer, mm-hmm. He's the one who did The Wind Rises.
Yeah, I know. So he does most of them.
He did do most of them. And to know that they went back to him.
Was the right thing to do if you were going to try to get this thing like extended.
Oh, 100%.
Because if they brought in someone else, it would have been garbage.
Oh, without a doubt. Like, I think it would have not only dishonored the film, but it would have also dishonored the work of what Miyazaki had already done and the intentions behind the original composition. And that's one of the great things about this film is that there's beauty that just pours out of every single second of this, whether or not if you're hearing, you know, Spencer's Mandela effect, you know, version or the regular version. But nevertheless, this is a beautiful film, and the everything from the compositions of the cells and the scenes and the design aesthetic of like everything from the castle itself to the robots to, you know, the way the magic works when the stone, you know, begins to light up. Even the scene, when I was watching it the other day in preparation for this, even the scene where you have, the old man in the caverns, the old man in the mines.
Yeah. Uncle Pom.
And he like, he cracks it open and he like shows the power within it and all the rocks start shining and everything. And, all that is just incredible. Did I get those characters mixed up?
Yes, that was confusing me for a bit.
Oh my gosh, the old engineer, not Uncle Pom. Uncle Pom was the dude in the cavern. Old engineer guy. Sorry. Yeah. I was gonna get it. Give me a second.
We got there eventually. Might have taken 20 minutes, but we got there.
Hey, you know, 20 minutes is 20 minutes. At least I'm not, you know, going nuts over song. So
don't. You know what you're doing. Stop it.
but this film, without a doubt, is one of the most, you know, all around, well-rounded, beautiful movies that just continues. Even now, every time I watch it, it's like I have to hold back tears because it is such a beautiful movie. And this is one of those opportunities where we can speak towards the idea that not only is the movie beautiful, but what it represents for me is like an incredible part of my life. You know, it's not just a simple moment where it's like, oh, I remember when I first saw this and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, mind you, yes, when I first saw it, it meant a lot. And that was great. But even more so now, I know what it represents as a whole. You know, it represents, you know, a great revelation of great works from a creative genius. It represents recognizing beautiful imagery and beautiful cinematography. It represents opportunities to spend with great friends in watching something so simple as somebody flying a glider into a hurricane cloud. Like that kind of thing is just, it's unique. And it's kind of like a singularity, if you will, like a single moment, a single instance that can only be created by what Miyazaki has done, you know? Plain and simple. Wrapping this whole thing up, Spence, what does this movie mean to you?
Gosh, such a difficult question. What does this movie mean to me? I don't know how to really properly express that, I don't think. Because, like, this movie comes at me, like, on just multiple levels. I know I was whining about it for a while. The soundtrack. My goodness. Like, I know I went on about it, but, like, that is the thing that just,
you did.
It grabs me, like, by the head. And, like, I love it. It's, like, one of my favorite things. The story is also really good. Like, I know we didn't really talk about, like, what specifically happens in the story, but it's kind of one of those things where, like, you don't really want to talk about it because you want people to just go and see it. Because,
yeah,
like, two people are yammering on about it without really talking about it for an hour. Like, it means a lot to both of us. And I really think that it's a special movie and deserves to be seen by other people. But, like, for me, though, this movie is just... I think this is probably, like... While Spirited Away was really great and I loved it, this is the movie that probably was, like, I'm permanently here. Like, I'm going to be checking out each one of these Studio Ghibli movies just to see what's going on. Because this is so high caliber for me that, like,
yeah,
I have to see it. Even if it sucks, I'm still like, oh, this one's bad, but maybe the next one will be good. Like this was the one where I was in permanently, you know?
You were fully invested in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. Like, it's different strokes for different folks when it comes to, like, choosing where that all-in moment is. And I think it's safe to say, like, this is one of those movies that for a specific director or a specific filmmaker, for a specific creative artist, you know, when you have somebody who's pitching their work for so long and hoping that people catch wind or catch fire of exactly what they're trying to put out, you have to sell them. You know, whether if it's the Marvel movies with the Russo brothers or the Matrix with the Wachowski family, with the Wachowski siblings, or it's, you know, every movie that Michael Bay does, you know, and whether or not if that's your thing or not. Not that I'm saying you should or shouldn't.
I feel like the way you said that is.
Because it's Michael Bay. or like if you know, it's like trying to be sold on a Wes Anderson film or his series, like his films. You know, you got to be sold on it. There's a certain point in every single one of those franchises where you come to the understanding that I need this in my life, and I can't, I'm choosing to not take another day without recognizing the expert, you know, creative direction, the absolute perfect writing prowess, the incredibly detailed and graceful artistry of the illustrators. It's hard to see all that and not choose to be all in.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's safe to say this is that particular film that kind of sold. I know you for sure and me, I'm both of us for sure, like, sold us on, you know, what this series is all about.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a film that will keep you on the edge of your seat and at the same time leave you feeling fulfilled as a fan of Miyazaki. And mind you, if you're listening to this, chances are you've probably seen the film or you're aware of it. And if there was ever an opportunity to convince you to take that step forward and watch it, or to convince you that you should go back and rewatch it again and just enjoy it. This is that moment. Go do it. Go watch it again. You deserve it. Go treat yourself, you know, and go and grab a snack and some popcorn or something to drink and watch this movie, because this is the type of movie that keeps cinema alive. This is the kind of movie that keeps people like Miyazaki fighting the notion that he knows he needs to retire, but he still always has that one more in him. This is the type of movie that inspires the next great, creator to come out of Studio Ghibli, whether if it's a whole nother artist or it's his son, whoever it may be. It's these types of movies. And, you can't really say anything else aside from that. And you're right. We've literally been talking for an hour and didn't really talk about the movie itself.
Yeah, like 10 minutes ago, I was like, we haven't actually talked about this movie or the story at all.
But you know what? It's fine, because I think the basic idea of this film, we outlined it in the synopsis, but the opportunity to celebrate this movie is not based in the amount of time we spend retelling the story, because that's you as the listener, that's your job. Your job is to go and watch the movie. Your job is to go and hear the details in terms of the plots and the small steps, whatever. Our job is just to continue to convince you that you should,
mm-hmm.
or you shouldn't, depending on what we're talking about. That's, you know, how it works.
Yeah, this is definitely in the should category.
This is definitely in the should. Final thoughts, Spence. Any thoughts, final?
Yeah, just two final thoughts, because I have them in my notes that I took this week. just two things we didn't even cover. Like, I don't know how I don't remember this, but there was a point where Shida has two pigtails, and they get shot off in
this
movie.
They get shot off?
I don't know why I saw that. I was like, I knew he shot at her, but I just did not remember her losing her hair and getting a haircut by gun.
Like, well, and then Dola mentions it later. She's like, oh, it's always a sad day when your pigtails get shot off or something to that effect. I'm like, what? How often did that happen to you?
She's a pirate. So, you know.
To get your pigtail shot off?
Part of the life, man. And that actually goes into the final point number two. Just characters. Like, especially it's like side characters. Again, Miyazaki makes such phenomenal side characters. Like,
mm-hmm.
like there are so many side characters in this movie that I just like and have like a strong feeling about, despite the fact they're not in that movie that much. Like, the boss and his wife. Like, they barely are in this, but I like both of them. Especially whole stupid fight.
Yes. I was going to say, absolute favorite scene. Absolute favorite scene in that entire movie for me is seeing them both flex on each other and then them going about hitting each other. And mind you, it's not the whole fight that I really love. It's just those beginning few punches that are thrown. Because it's not even a fight at that point. It's more of just a test of strength with each other. They're literally two guys who are wailing on each other to see who tips over first. And it's so great. It's like what every dude has ever done, going out to the bar or hanging out with other guys and like, hey, bro, hit me. No, for real, hit me. I could take it. And it's like, yeah.
It's kind of the best part of the movie. It's amazing. All right, that's my final.
Well, wrapping this up, like I said, this is the type of movie you definitely want to take the opportunity to see. You want to expose your kids to. You want your kids to get a chance to watch it, because this movie absolutely encapsulates everything you can imagine. Excuse me, of about magic and of friendship and the, not to sound so cliche, but the power of love.
It sounds very cliched, but it's not that bad.
It
in
isn't.
The movie.
And
it's not.
And I'm starting to realize there's like a running theme with a lot of Miyazaki's films. The power of love prevails in just about every single opportunity of his movies.
Yeah.
And I love that message. I absolutely do. So if you get a chance, check it out. Watch the film if it's available on rent for Vudu. Or if you're waiting until HBO Max comes down, you'll get a good chunk of
them. I'm so angry about HBO Max. We should have an episode that's just like Streaming Wars talk or something.
We should. Food for thought for the future upcoming episode. But, yeah, if you get a chance, check out this movie. And we are absolutely excited as the month is coming to an end. We have one last episode. We are going to be covering a Miyazaki film, and we are absolutely excited to go over that particular film with you because it's one that is honestly another one of these magic films that I actually have a special story to tell you about when we cover that episode.
And
so
I will shockingly be talking about the soundtrack yet again.
If you haven't noticed, Spencer's a soundtrack kind of guy.
I really am. Sell me on this.
So if you haven't had the chance, check us out on all streaming platforms: Audio Play, Libsyn, Google Play, Audio Boom, Google Play, Libsyn, Stitcher, Player FM, Spotify, Pandora, Apple, iTunes, everything where you can find your streaming music and so forth. You'll find us there. Also, check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. If you're loving these episodes, drop us a like or drop us a positive comment, a 5-star review on our iTunes page. We'd love to hear from you. So, but this was great. And as the month of anime, it's gonna be, you know, we are coming to a close as it's coming to an end. We are still taking every opportunity to celebrate movies, and not just celebrate movies, but celebrate the people who brought those senses of joys and wonder and love to the table and has helped us maintain some sense of sanity in this difficult and really arduous time. So, but yeah, that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.